This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Around we go, playing that game. Sell, move, use, be done. They want us to stay. Around we go.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to Irreplaceable Truths, where we get raw and real about veterinary medicine with a bunch of veterinarians that still really care about this profession and want to help out this profession as much as possible. My name again is Dr. G, and I'm here with a very close, good friend of mine, an amazing veterinary surgeon, Dr. Adam Gassel. He did his undergrad at UC Irvine, went to vet school at Purdue, did 2 years at ASG here in LA for his internships and surgical internship, and finished his residency at Tennessee. Welcome, Dr. Gassel. Did I miss anything?
No. Thank you for the kind introduction.
As you can, people can tell, he's a much better looking version of me. We have the same barber. So, but that's what happens when you have daughters. So I'm just letting you guys know that.
True.
So Adam, I got you here today because you work at a specialty group. You work with interns, you work with residents, you work with the early career veterinarians that I'm very interested in helping the most. So basically, what got you into veterinary surgery versus going into general practice?
Yeah, getting into my clinical year, fourth year finishing vet school, I had made the decision I at least wanted to do an internship to get further exposure into some of the potential specialties to pursue. And I tried to go into my rotating internship with a pretty open mind as to, you know, what possibilities would be there. Throughout that, I kind of got into leaning towards oncology and surgery. And by about 2 months in, I decided surgery was really the right fit for me and where most of my passion lied and where I thought I would could have the biggest impact and also had the most passion and interest in. And so that's when that decision was made for me. And it a lot to do with, I think the mentors that I had at Animal Specialty Group at that time were a huge influence on that decision.
So from your perspective of importance of mentorship, are you still in contact with them?
Yes. I see them at the yearly meeting. We still will reach out to each other. One of my mentors, Kirk Windelberg, is who I send all my total hip candidates to because he is the man when it comes to total hip replacement, in my opinion, here in California. And then Mike Huber, probably my biggest influence on me and closest mentor. We still text each other, keep in touch. We ask each other about different candidates coming through for residency positions and job positions and things of that nature.
So when you look at internships now compared to how your internship was 20 years ago, how have they changed?
I don't think that the programs have changed a whole lot. I think there are more opportunities because of the number of specialty hospitals in private practice than when I was coming through. Predominant internship positions were available at the university level, not as many in private practice like there is today. I think that the student or the applicant has changed. I think their expectation, what they're told maybe by their professors before leaving vet school to go out into an internship, I've noticed a big change in that direction.
And what kind of changes?
Not necessarily.
You're in the hot seat, buddy.
Yeah, not necessarily a positive. That's not to knock every applicant or intern that has come through, and maybe it's been a shift in some positive way in the right direction. You know, when we came through, it was still when you signed up to do an internship, it was you get to take my soul for a year, and I will basically live in the hospital. Doesn't really matter what salary you give me per year, because I'm still going to probably make about $1.10 an hour when you add up all the hours that I worked over what I'm getting paid. And you didn't care because you were trading that for the experience and the opportunity to give you the knowledge and experience to go on to do a residency if that's what you want to pursue, or to turn and go out into practice and be able to practice at the level you wanted to practice at. I think now there's been a huge shift into work-life balance, I guess, are the terms that I hear thrown around often. And so a lot of the interns that I've seen over the past 10 years, each year, more of them come through with questions of, when am I going to be done? What time do we finish? How long is my lunch break? Things of that nature.
See, yeah, and I think a lot of these students don't understand that veterinary medicine is very slow to change. Yeah. There's a fear of changing the way we do things, because you talk to veterinarians, they're like, oh, we've done this for 30 years. Why should we change the way we do it? And I think the problem is if you're looking at the burnout rate and you're looking at the stress that all these students are going through, I think there's a huge problem with working them into the ground, because they're already exhausted. And I'm pretty sure they're emotionally exhausted. They're mentally exhausted. And you also get the physical exhaustion. And it does not lead to a positive go-home recovery experience from the workday. And I, you know, with my research that I'm doing, we can get into the ideas of sleep quality and the ideas of cortisol levels and what it will do for you the next day. So it's almost a snowball effect.
Yeah.
So question then I'll ask you, because if I think we need more residents, I think we need more specialists. You'll never get that argument out of my mouth that we don't. If a student is not sure that they want to go into specialty, do they need to do an internship versus finding somewhere which will have excellent mentorship in general practice?
Yeah, I think the downside for that person would be if they go out into general practice and they have great mentorship and they're getting experience that way, they're going to be at a disadvantage when they turn and they want to then apply to pursue a specialty in some field. I'm not saying they can achieve that, but it's going to put them behind, because they're going up against applicants that have now done a year of a rotating internship somewhere or a specialty internship year, and that's who they're competing against. And so they're letters of recommendation might not be as impactful, because the person they're being mentored by may not be known at these other residency programs or universities.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
There also isn't a quality check. So most internship programs need to meet certain requirements in order to be an approved accredited program. And so there you kind of know what this person or this applicant, when they're applying for residency, what they've had to deal with and what they've seen and what experience they got, what type of teaching, et cetera. Whereas if you take someone who's an applicant coming from a private practice, you really don't know what they saw. What did they get to do? How were they taught? Were they taught the right way? So that's where I think the problem may come into play for someone that taking that path.
Right. Well, I hear from a lot of new senior veterinarians, vet students, junior vet students, that they need to go do an internship because they're not comfortable doing what they need to do. And I'm like, well, if you go do an internship, you're going to go work like a dog.
Yep.
You got to be prepared for it. You're going to get paid a hell of a lot less. And there's no guarantee you're going to learn what you're going to want to learn if you're going to go to a general practice. Like, how many times in your specialty practice, which is an incredible practice, you have world-renowned veterinarians there, skin problems, ear problems, broken toenail. I mean, unless they're on the emergency rotation, they're not going to see the stuff that, you know, general practice really needs to see. And that's, I don't know if that's ever portrayed right to the veterinary student, right? Because that's, how do I say this without really sounding like an ass? I don't think internships are for everybody.
Agreed.
I think sometimes people coming out of internships, what you actually get when you hire them, because I have, you get an exhausted second year vet at that time that still doesn't really know much and you still have to train.
Yeah.
So when you have interns come in, are you really worried that they learn how to pull blood, put in IV catheters, hook up IV lines? What are the main things you really want your interns to learn throughout that first year?
So what I tell the interns when they come in, because a lot of them come in and especially, well, you know, again, they're coming through me to do a surgical rotation. So, you know, I think they're excited about how much suture am I going to do? Am I making the saw cut for a TPLO? You know, do I get to take out the spleen? What do I get to actually do? Bandage changes, learning to make splints, all the, you know, things sort of you're alluding to. I tell them really as an intern, what our job is to expose them to those things. But what they really should be learning is to become a really good diagnostician. Understanding the pathophysiology behind what's going on in the animal for these different disease processes and being able to interpret and understand what's going on. But again, our internship program is designed to be ready to produce someone to go into a residency program. Our internship program is not designed to take people that, if they decide they don't want to do a residency, they're going to be really well prepared to go to a general practice and be able to diagnose skin problems, be able to place catheters, phlebotomy, all these things that really they're going to end up facing. So I agree with you. Not everyone is the right fit for an internship program. And I think if you make the decision to do an internship, you need to be doing it for the right reasons. And you need to go in with your eyes wide open. Like you said, maybe we're not doing, or somewhere along this path, these students aren't being well informed as to what the expectation should be in going to do that. Because I do see a lot of applicants that come through to do internships where they just say, well, I'm doing this because I just need more experience before I go out into the real world. So maybe we're failing these students at the university level, at their clinical year level, because that's really where they should be gaining this stuff, is in their third and fourth year. not through an internship per se.
So let me put you down memory lane.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yikes, right? When you were a senior in vet school and you were doing your surgical rotation, I know where I was standing. It was in the back corner of the room. There was interns in front of me, residents in front of me, and the surgeon in front of me. How much true experience do you think these veterinarians get their clinical year?
Very little. I think for most of us that went through at a university, you're right. You have, and now you have not just interns in front of you, specialty interns in front of you, and your residents, and then the faculty. So yes, as a senior student, you're at the back of the line. So what me and my classmates who were all interested in pursuing internships, we initiated an emergency surgery student rotation club, so to speak, where we stayed after hours and we let the residents, the surgery residents know in large and small animal that we were on call all the time. Any surgical emergency they had coming in, please call us and we would come in and scrub in and watch. And that's how we gained a lot of our experience, was outside. I think a lot of students also that are able to go through and do shelter rotations, that seems to be where they really get most of their experience. And you're right, because as a senior student watching a total hip replacement, how many of us are going to go out and do total hip replacements when we're done?
Well, how many of us are going to go into general practice or practice at all and have clients that want to walk in the door ready to do an ultrasound, MRI, blood work, x-rays, bone scan, all in one appointment?
Right.
And that's the thing, is like, that's the white pillar effect, correct? I mean, the reality of veterinary medicine is you got to do baby steps with these clients, you know, unless it's don't get me wrong. If it's a hemoabdomen and you're like, we got to do this now, that's a whole different story. But if they're like, oh, my dog's limping, okay, you recommend x-rays or all these things, and I don't know. There's nothing wrong with trying anti-inflammatory for a couple of days, see if the limp goes away.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. So I think what you're alluding to is when you're in a position as a general practice owner and you're hiring these veterinarians that have gone through an internship program, when they see a dog coming in with a slight limp, yes, their first go-to is, let's get him in the CT. Let's do an MRI. Let's send him for a bone scan, where you're going, how about we just put our hands on the dog? How about we start with the basic x-ray? Or how about, yeah, we prescribe some medications and monitor for a couple days, because a torn cruciate ligament or a bad hip is not an emergency in most people's.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Books. And so, sorry, to circle back to my point and where I see our role in internship. And what I mean by, you know, trying to train these interns to be good diagnosticians is exactly that, is take away the fancy tools and the instruments. You guys don't need to worry about that. If you become a surgical resident or a surgical specialist, you will have plenty of time to play with all those things and learn to do that stuff. But you should be spending this year figuring out how you decide which of these patients should be going to the next step in doing those things and being able to figure out those problems.
Do you allow your interns to do that, or that's not, interns aren't allowed to, right? That's going to be more the specialists and the residents that are going to be over and above what an intern thinks. Well, or does the intern bring it to you and makes that recommendation and you're like, ah?
Yeah, every service is a little bit different. Every specialist is a little bit different. I'd say in our department, it was, you go in the room, you get a history from the client, you do your basic physical exam. If it's an orthopedic examination, I usually do them with the student for the first week or two, okay, or the intern, to get them comfortable and walking them through, because that's my job, is to teach them what's the proper way to do it. And then after that, they're usually doing it first. Then they come to me, they present the case. I ask them what their differentials would be. I ask them, what are the next steps that you want to do? And then we go through it together. But allowing them to fail and allowing them to come up with, you know, a treatment plan, a diagnostic plan. And then if we're doing x-rays or we're doing blood work, then okay, this, go interpret this. I don't want you in there holding the animal to take x-rays. Like, we have our support staff and nursing staff that does that. I want you spending time interpreting that x-ray, reading it, and trying to diagnose the problem.
So I've been out of practice now for 9 months. Anything come about of that, because you're talking about x-ray? In California, they don't want anyone in the x-ray room anymore, correct?
Correct.
So you have to sedate all the animals that are getting x-rays?
That is what we're being pushed towards.
That's fucking stupid.
It doesn't speed things up, and it doesn't lower the cost for our clients either.
What if the dog's in congestive heart failure?
Yeah.
What if the dog has kidney disease? So you're telling me now, in order to take an x-ray, we're going to have to do lab work at least before you sedate it. Because if you don't, the California State Medical Board is going to be all over your ass saying, why the fuck didn't you do this?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and now not only that, I think a lot of the, you know, nursing staff technicians are refusing to try even attempt to take x-rays in these critical patients unless we sedate them and unless they are chemically immobilized. And so, you know, even though it's not mandated that it has to be done, it's really a case-by-case basis. It's strongly encouraged where it's safe to do so. But now we're getting backlash from our support staff, paraprofessional staff, that they're refusing to do them unless the animal is chemically restrained. It's creating a big problem, and it's difficult to get through the day. You see less patients because a basic recheck that should take 15 minutes is now 45 minutes. Your owners are frustrated because they're now spending time not at their job and their work because they're waiting for you to sedate it, reverse it, you know, everything that goes into it. It's not great. Not great.
Wow.
Yeah, you can imagine trying to get, and especially, you know, in a surgical service, most of your rechecks are x-rays.
So I get it. Then, so how do you teach your interns or your externs? I forget. You also have senior veterinary students that come through there.
We do. Yeah, we have students. We do have some externs as well. So interns, and then we've had residents that have come through too, different specialties.
Yeah, and if anyone listening wants an amazing externship, you're going to want to see Dr. Adam Gassel. He's done many of my associates that I've hired over the years, and he's second to none.
Thank you.
I'm not kidding. I mean, one of the things, you know, what's amazing is your bedside manner. And you're one of the guys I've always known to have the emotional intelligence needed to understand what clients wanted and to understand to be able to read the room, to be able to just get a pulse on what's going on. You're very, very good at reading clients. Looking at these new veterinarians coming out, where would you put their emotional intelligence right now?
I think probably on par with everybody else that has come through. Again, we're selecting different types of applicants now. And I think that the landscape of veterinary medicine is changing so rapidly, just like everything, right? You know, we went from when you and I came through, universities were the mecca. There were a couple private practice places, but again, most of those were still privately owned, privately run. There's, you know, as you know, this massive corporate takeover of veterinary medicine. And that's, it's changing everything. It's changing the expectations of the students that are coming through. It's changing the attitude and the
culture.
The enthusiasm of the specialists that are used to working in a particular environment, and now that culture and environment has changed so rapidly and not for the good for most of us. And so it makes it difficult. So I think it's created a bit of an unfair environment, I think, and an unfortunate environment for some of these newer grads. I mean, you and I were speaking before coming on the podcast about, you know, you and I grew up in this culture, in this environment, situation of a private owned practice and what we were able to do and not do, and all the good things or positives I felt came with that. Now we've also lived through this transition of becoming corporate owned and watching that take place. Whereas these newer grads, they almost don't know any different. So for us,
is a good thing.
Yes. For us, it's very dramatic and it's very hard to see because we're living through that transition. For the newer grads, they don't know any different. You know, it's always been that way for them. And so maybe that'll be okay.
Well,
I don't know.
The good news about corporate-owned practices is I think veterinarians are finally getting a better salary.
Yes, and better hours. They're, I think, like you alluded to, mental health, I think, is going to improve that from a cultural perspective, I hope. You know, now the newer veterinarians get to battle with social media and the bashing and the...
You mean Yelp and Google review and...
Yeah.
It's called electronic word of mouth.
Baby. Okay, yeah.
And it is nasty. And the problem with these early career vets is they live on their phones. They live with social media, not judging. But I'm just saying they're more aware of what people are saying about them.
Sure.
Where you and I, we had no clue what people were saying about this.
Yeah, our value and our criticism came from our mentors and came from the people that we looked up to. And so if it was constructive criticism, if it was anything, you know, negative, it was impactful and it meant something. If it was positive, it meant even something more. And, you know, going back to thank you for the kind words about my bedside manner and approach to how I practice is really a direct effect from the mentorship that I had. I was very, very fortunate in my path to interact and have the people teach me that I did. Even at the level of my residency program, you know, quick story. You know, I'm in a residency. Most people know as residents, you're just a slave to the grind. You're still low person on the totem pole and your hours are horrible. I had our firstborn, Aiden, was born 2 weeks before I started my residency program, moved to another state. My wife was super happy. And, you know, it came, I think we were in the residency program a couple months. And it was a Friday. We had, I think, 12 cases hospitalized. I was on the soft tissue service with Dr. DJ Krawinkle at Tennessee. And it's Friday afternoon, and it's now 4:30, and we're trying to gather all the students and the interns because we have to do afternoon rounds and figure out cases. And DJ looks at me, and he says, Adam, what time are you supposed to pick up your son? I said, my wife will go get him today. We got too much going on. He's like, that's nonsense. And he literally pulls a baseball out of his pocket and he hands it to me. And he says, you don't want to miss this time with your boy. And he goes, you go pick him up and you go take him to the park and you guys have fun. I got it handled here. I mean, I challenge anyone that's gone through a surgical residency program to tell me that they've ever had an experience like that from their mentor. I mean, this is how... At Tennessee, it was just amazing. These were the people that I got to train with. And so I've tried to take that approach and that attitude and pay it forward. So that's where that comes from.
But you see, when that's a private owned practice. That mentality is private owned practice, right? Yeah. When I have, my associates, you know, having kids, getting married, they would call me and say, my son's sick today. My daughter has a dental appointment I need to go to. I would cover for them because
sure,
private practice is about family. It's a family run business. That's why our clients love us, right? Because we're a mom pop shop. And now we have this corporate orientation, which, yeah, you might get less work hours, but I guarantee you they still want your average client transaction and your revenue to be up there. So you might be working less hours, but you're going to be working twice as hard during those hours in order to hit that minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, our practice was a prime example. You know, as practice owners, we always decided every year when we would look at the numbers, and you know, when you're having someone, your business manager coming to you and talking to you about profit margins and where things are at, and you know, I would say operated usually on an average of a 10-12% profit margin. Okay. Could we have operated at 20 plus? Absolutely. But what that means is that you're paying your paraprofessional staff less, you're cutting hours, your specialists and doctors don't have the number of support technicians that makes their life much more easy, manageable, enjoyable. And so as business owners, we made the decision, the conscious decision, that we would definitely earn less of a profit and put that back into the business. And the way we measured that, whether that was the right decision, was we looked at our retainment of our technicians and our specialists and our staff. And I think we had like zero turnover. I mean, our technicians and nurses and receptionists and specialists, they never left that practice unless they had to move out of state somewhere or, you know, something happened. And it's been mind-blowing to see in the last 5 years since selling to a corporation, the amount of turnover that takes place. And I'm sure that if you asked other private practices that have sold to corporations, they probably have seen a similar effect. You know, they looked at us and said, okay, you're paying this technician as much as we would pay two technicians. So that's fine. We're not going to lower their salary, but what we're going to do is expect them to do the work of two technicians. And so in that regard, then that technician was miserable. They were overworked, you know, and fell into the whole trap that you were alluding to earlier, where they're just exhausted, mentally fatigued, burnout. And in the end of the day, they're like, the money's not worth it. You can't pay me enough to want to come here and put myself through this. It's not okay. So it's a problem.
Well, the problem is like the emotional labor that goes into veterinary practice, whether you are a kennel staff, receptionist, technician, doctor,
yeah,
is insane.
Yeah.
You know, because you're dealing with emergencies, you're dealing with critical, you're dealing with euthanasia, you're dealing with the new puppies and kittens.
Yeah.
I mean, on a full day, the spectrum, at least in general practice, it's all over, you know? And the problem, when you look at these corporate groups, most of the high ups, especially in the C-suite, have yet to step into a veterinary practice, much less work in a veterinary practice.
Yeah.
And they think a spreadsheet can give them the answer.
Right. Yeah. They don't realize the emotion and the other nuances that come into...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Providing healthcare, whether it be to people or whether it be to pets. And so the problem is you have these corporations that have run candy companies, they've owned, you know, food franchises, whatever it may be, and they want to apply the same business logic to a health profession. And they'll have some success in certain areas, but they're missing a lot of stuff that, like you said, you can't solve these things and address them appropriately on a spreadsheet. But they think they can. They look at someone like me and they just go, hey, there's a new grad coming out that finished their residency program. I can pay them half of what we pay you in salary. We can put them on the new commission plan that you're not on, where they're getting paid partial commission for things that they do and zero commission on other items, where we're paying you a full percent commission. And that's going to look really good on our books. But they think that that person's going to bring to the table the same value that I bring.
It's so sad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, again, you know, irreplaceable truths. I was told that, Dr. G, everyone's replaceable.
Yeah. But that's corporate mentality.
Right. Oh, yeah. But who are they replacing you with? I mean, that's the thing. There might have that one surgeon that might be wanting to. What's the chances that they're even going to come to you, your place? Like, if you're a boarded surgeon, the sky's the limit on job offers available for you around the country, right? And even here in Southern California, there aren't that many of you. And there definitely are not ones that I would even let touch my dog, just from history that I've had. I mean, it's baffling to me. That's how they think they can do it. They've done it in dental. Mm. They've done it in human health. But you know, it's here. Is it here to stay? Or are they going to fail? I'm hoping they fail. I'm hoping more people come out and start redoing the private practice, get into that entrepreneurship thing. I don't know if vet schools nowadays scare these kids out of owning a practice.
Yeah. I think. Yeah, I don't have my finger on the pulse enough to know with the new grads that are coming out, what percentage even have an interest in owning their own practice. I mean, I feel like when you and I were finishing vet school, I had a large percentage of my classmates that were definitely going to go out and either start their own practice, or they had already taken a job where they were going to have the opportunity to become an owner in that business
within like 2 years.
Yeah. And so, yep. You know, yeah, and then it depends what state you're in. You know, for me, I still have thought about opening another private practice outside and changing it so that I can control it. I can control the pricing. I can offer my services at a rate and a price that I think is appropriate. But then you get into California labor laws and owning a business and the headaches that come with that. And so that's what kind of deters me, just to be honest. I don't know that I want to start that all over again. I'm just in a different phase in my life.
If I was young, I'd do it again.
Yeah, I would right now. If I was a young surgeon coming out and I saw what's out there, it would be really easy to compete. You know, it would be really easy to do well. And this is strictly because of the pricing structure and what these corporations are charging people.
Oh, I think they've made it so easy.
Yeah.
Go open up a practice that's about, I don't know, maybe half a mile away and charge 25% less.
Yeah. I mean,
people lined up.
Yeah. I mean, the example exists. You know, you have our practice, there is another, and we don't have to name names. So there's, you know, three other hospitals just like ours within a 10-mile radius. And then there is another practice that's within 4 miles of where all of us are that have been privately owned up until this last year. Well, the last 4 years since we've been corporate owned in these other places, we have increased their value and their business tenfold because they're charging thousands of dollars less to do the same stuff that we're doing. Now, it's interesting because they've become corporate owned. And so the last conversation I had over there is now we're starting to see the effect on their practice that the same effect it had on us. But the model's there. It showed that if you're a specialty practice in the swimming pool with a bunch of other corporate owned businesses, you can do very, very well. You just have to resist then the massive dollars that these corporations are going to come in and offer you.
Oh, no kidding.
Right. So
I didn't really want to get on that corporate tangent for so long. But you know, you did talk about workplace culture. How has that been, let's say, in the last 5 years compared to when you started? Has it?
It's not good. I love the people that I work with. And a big reason why all of us are still there is the love and respect that we have for one another and the joy that we get working with each other and the trust that we have with one another. But no one's happy, I would say, with everything else outside of that aspect of what we do. There's constant complaining and frustrations and anger and all the emotions you can think of on a regular basis. It's not good, unfortunately. And when I talk to some of the, you know, my colleagues, it's not like the grass is any greener. The grass is almost, it's the same color because now there's so many corporations that own these hospitals that we could go to. And so
do you feel that negativity runs down and hits the interns and the externs? Do they?
Of course. Yeah. 100%. I mean, it's bad. And I feel bad when these students or interns are in the hospital and they're listening to this negativity all the time. It's a huge problem. And I try to be conscious of it. I try to make my nurses aware, like, hey, you know, this person's visiting for 2 weeks. I think we need to be really aware of what we're saying and how we're saying things because that's unfair to them. You know, not that your feelings aren't valid, but I don't think it's fair to voice all this stuff, you know, hanging your dirty laundry out there for everyone to see. You know, it's not right for them.
So, talking about the corporate shift, let's talk about Shine, the clients and their shifting expectations.
Yeah.
How has the cost of care in the last, since COVID, affected your practice? How many surgeries were you doing prior and how many are you doing now?
Dramatic change. Probably pre-COVID, I'm probably doing 4 to 5 procedures a day. I see consults half day and I operate each day. So probably 4 to 5 cases a day. I'm lucky to average probably one now a day. It bumps sometimes to 3 to 4 in a day. Then the problem I run into now is they're staffing the hospital as lean as they can because those numbers look good on paper. So even when I have 3 or 4 surgeries, I'm now there till 8 or so at night because of the staffing that I need to get through those procedures. We're just so short staffed. And then the nurses get overwhelmed. They feel overworked. It's a bad cycle right now. So it's very frustrating. I looked at a year ago, I looked at the total number of surgeries I did and the amount of revenue I produced and made compared to the previous year. I cut about half the number of cases and made the same amount of money. So that just gives you an idea of how much more we're charging per case that I do.
Wow.
Yeah. So
for your quality of life.
Yeah. My quality of life is great. I work very little. I still make a lot of money. But the problem that me and the other surgeons at the practice now talk about all the time is, you know, we don't want to lose our skill set. You know, I love doing surgery. I love being able to help, you know, and fix things. And, you know, if I'm at work, I want to work. That's what I'm trained to do. And so that's a frustration. I don't want to lose the skills that I have. Plus, it's very draining to continually see a patient, talk to a client. You know that you can make this better and you can fix this problem and do well by everybody, but you're not allowed to, you're not able to because of the dollars.
So if you were going to talk to your interns, how do you have them handle the cost of care discussion with clients? What advice would you give to a early career vet that's just graduating?
Be honest. You know, I think that I try to be very honest with the clients and sit them down right away and say, look, this is what you're looking at financially. If it is a surgery that I think could be performed kind of by a routine board certified surgeon and safe to do so, it doesn't require some special expertise that I may have in a certain area. They tell me that they could afford it, but they need, you know, it has to be less and I can send them somewhere else and still the animal can be helped. Then I send them to go do that. I don't bat an eye about it. Otherwise I just try to be frank with them, you know, and tell them, you know, these are the reasons that the cost is more to some extent. Here's some areas we can try and minimize your cost. You know, go get blood work done with your veterinarian instead of paying for it here. I prescribe a ton of postoperative medications into Costco and other pharmacies because it's dramatic savings for the client. Talking $400 to $500 in savings, type dramatic.
But after $12,000, what's another $500?
It's tough. And then, you know, I think we're seeing a lot more clients with insurance.
Well, that helps.
Yeah.
I mean, if I ever have any friends, I always say, hey, get pet near insurance and get it now. It's the best way to
prevent
that.
Yeah.
I mean, pet insurance for everyone who's listening. I mean, if you get that, then hopefully you can ease up on the cost of care discussion. That's one of the causes of a client becoming uncivil when they're in your office.
Yeah.
What would you say if I made the argument that I believe vet schools are telling a lot of these new grads that, oh, this is a referral case. Oh, this needs to be a referral case. Oh, you need to refer this case, like a cystotomy. I mean, there's a lot of cases that are being referred by new career vets, and it happens at my wife's practice right now. She had a block Tom come in, and the new career vet was like, oh, no, I got to refer this.
Is that because they're afraid to deal with it? Is that because they're being trained that it's a liability if you take this cat to surgery because you should give the client the option to go to a specialist? What do you know? The reasoning behind what's
she said?
Driving
that's what
that?
They were. That's what they told her at school.
Hmm.
And for me, we're talking. You could be at least 5x, 7x more than me. That's my thing. It's like everyone's on one hand is bitching about the cost of care, but on the other hand, it's like, why aren't you preparing these new career grads, you know, these new career veterinarians to take care of this problem? Why do you think that everything needs to be referred now? I mean, what do they think general practitioners are going to become? Just vaccine pushers?
Yeah.
Which vaccines even has changed, right? It's every 3 years or you do titers until they need them.
Yeah.
You know, and am I concerned about the veterinary education system? Absolutely. Because again, they're afraid to change. Yeah. I mean, they are changing some things, but again, their whole idea is let's open as many vet schools as possible. And a lot of these new vet schools
are going to lose their accreditation because no one's passing the national board exam.
Yeah, and you know, with the other vet school in California near us, where they have to farm all these students out to get their third and fourth year experience, where's the continuity there? Where's the checks and balances? What are they being told? You know, how are they being trained? So I agree with you. Some of these things need to are problematic through the vet school phase. And so that's a much bigger fish to have to fry. And going back to something we talked about a little bit earlier with the internship programs and the balance, right? Maybe it's not right that interns shouldn't be worked to the bone, emotionally exhausted.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Physically exhausted, expected to then think on their feet the next day and be able to make healthy decisions, all that kind of stuff. So do we implement a change in the programs to where we're doing two-year internship programs? They're paid more. They get to work more reasonable hours, but still they're getting the experience and the knowledge that they need, but it's drawn out over a longer period of time so that they don't have to work as hard. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is.
Well, let me give you a scenario. Veterinarian graduates on a Friday. Are they ready the next following Monday to go work by themselves?
They should be. I think that...
In your honest opinion.
It depends what they're doing. So are they ready to go do, you know, five spays and neuters in a day? Probably not. I've always told students, you know, a majority of them, find a general practice where you can... The mentorship is huge. And even in a general practice, you know, when you guys are interviewing and they say, we've got four or five vets, you know, you're going to come in here, you know, ask them, hey, is someone going to be able to scrub in or oversee or direct me, you know, for at least the first 6 months that I'm there, you know, what kind of support do I have? I think that that is important.
And the problem is, even though there's four or five veterinarians, the question is, do those four or five veterinarians want to mentor?
Right.
Just because you're going to go to a practice with a bunch of doctors doesn't mean you're going to have someone that's going to be able to answer your questions or want to answer your questions or make you feel like an absolute complete piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's very difficult. It's a very slippery slope, but the mentorship piece is huge. The emotional intelligence piece is huge. You know, I'm going to test your honesty.
Oh, time's up.
No, time's up, right? What was the worst surgical case you ever dealt with?
Jeez. Like from a client nightmare perspective, from the disease process perspective?
Okay, from a client nightmare perspective, number one, yes.
Oh man, I've been pretty fortunate. So the biggest in client Nightmare. What I mean nightmare is, you know, losing sleep, stress, anger, frustration.
Was
dealing with a case that I never even did surgery on the patient. So I was asked for an opinion on a case that was operated by someone else. And so the client said, we've lost trust in that surgeon. Do you have someone else there that will just at least look at our dog and give us an honest opinion of what they think is going on and what should be done? Okay. So I did. Met with the clients, gave them an honest opinion that, look, your dog's stable, it's doing well. I wouldn't go back to surgery. I wouldn't do anything. You know, that's just my opinion. You know, dog ended up doing fine, was at home, but these clients were angry and frustrated and felt like something was done wrong. So they found the right attorney. This attorney is someone in California that is very adamant about changing the laws to where you can sue for emotional damage and not just the value of the pet any longer. And so they took on this case and all of us were named in the lawsuit. And this went on for close to 3 years.
Wow. I never knew that.
Yeah. And it was like, I literally gave you my opinion on something. I never even put my hands on this animal. But they just, you know, these attorneys just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. We ended up being vindicated, winning, however you want to put it. But truly, did
you win? You lost sleep?
No,
it destroyed you.
Of course, yeah, you hit, and it hit every. You know, there were six doctors at our practice named in this. You know, it affected everyone. So that's the one that comes to mind. I've been fortunate. I've never been, knock on wood, you know, sued against. I've had complaints filed against me to the board. They've all been, you know, thrown out. And most of those are people that are just pissed about money, you know. And
it's always about money.
Typically, yeah. I'd say 99% of the time it's about that. So my worst case that made me the most nervous was my first week as a resident. I was on call because they put you on call right away. I get a call from the resident on the zoo exotic side at Tennessee. It said, we have a 28-year-old monkey that we think is obstructed and needs emergency surgery. And I'm like, I'm sorry, did you say monkey as in primate? They said, oh yeah, it's here over from the zoo. And I'm like, is 28 years old for a monkey? Like, I don't, where, how does this work? Is there someone there that can do anesthesia? Oh yeah. It's kind of like operating on an old man. It's like, oh, okay. And so you can imagine I'm, you know, driving to the hospital. I am trying to recall if I ever looked at primate anatomy. What am I going to get into? So you talk about, hey, a new grad, are they ready to hit the ground running? You know, it doesn't change, Gersh. I mean, something's always going to be new. You're probably always going to run into something you haven't experienced before.
We haven't perfected.
Yeah, but you want to be equipped, ask the right questions, draw on your experiences, whatever those may be in whatever situation. But anyway.
So how would you tell young veterinarians is the easiest way to make great decisions under stress and pressure?
Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Agreed. Communication.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. I really, that word's perfect. I mean, that is what I preach to all the students, interns, residents coming through. Because I will get asked, like, why do your clients, that was terrible, but they're not angry with you, they're not upset. You know, they were really pissed off because the front desk told them one thing. Their veterinarian told them it was going to be $500 to come in and have what really is a $5,000 procedure done. Whatever the reasons may be, that client came in super angry because you did a patella luxation surgery and the dog is still limping 4 months later. You know, what do you do with them? And I said, you don't hide from the client. You don't put it off onto somebody else to give them the bad news or tell them what's going on. You talk to them face to face and you communicate with them. And you're honest.
Integrity.
Yeah. And
integrity and people will is
see,
everything.
Yeah. People will see through that. They'll respond to it. You'll stay out of trouble, I think. And you'll feel better about yourself.
And again, mark it down in your chart.
Yes.
Everything you told them.
Write down.
Put into your chart without fail.
Yes.
Put it in the chart.
Record everything.
Record everything. I can't tell you how many veterinarians in the state of California have fucking gotten screwed over. Not because they did anything wrong with the case, because the state board did not like how their charts were written up.
Yes, document. And also for you.
Write a book if you need to.
Also for you, because a year later, all of a sudden, you're going to get a letter from the board about a case. And you, I don't know, I guess maybe because the older I am, I can't remember 3 days ago what I had said maybe. But document.
So how do you take care of all the emotional labor and exhaustion that you deal with? Because you deal with a lot of critical cases, a lot of heart. I mean, for you, a TPLO, you can do with your eyes closed. I'm not going to go there. But still, not now, because you're only doing one surgery maybe a day, but when you're doing 4 or 5 surgeries a day, how did you shut it off when you got in your car and you drove home?
Depends what the surgeries were. Depends how they went. Sometimes you can't shut it off. Either because you're not sure you did everything perfect or exactly the way you wanted to, or you're still getting phone calls all night because the patient's not doing well. I think over the years you become accustomed to it to some extent. And yeah, you're right. I mean, because I'm operating a lot less, but because of that, you know, everything is more impactful. you do criticize and you hang on everything and think about everything. And part of the nature of our practice now is I am doing the cases that I do tend to operate are much more critical and much more intense. Cases because of that, because the people that are coming there, it needs to be performed by someone with experience and know what they're doing.
So knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to a senior veterinary student or a first year veterinary student now? You and I are 25, 26 years in.
Oof. Maybe not worry so much about the grade you're getting in the class, but really trying to learn and connect with people. Understand why you're learning what you're learning. I think you'll still be successful grade-wise because of that. But I was through a time in vet school where I was so worried about what letter grade I was getting in a class. I don't think I was learning as much as I should have walking away from that compared to some of my classmates who knew. I had 1 or 2, 5, 6 classmates I can think of that knew they were going into general practice, were never going to apply for internship or residency. And so I think they really learned a lot more and got a lot more out of their classes because they were way less concerned about the letter grade and absorbing. I myself and sort of my group of friends that we studied together all the time all were kind of committed to that internship probable residency tract. And so we were much more focused on letter grades. And everything worked out in the end for me and for them. But I think that's something to consider. And try to get as much experience as you can. There's nothing like experience. So put in those extra hours. Go in after hours voluntarily. If really you want to be more comfortable when you finish school and seeing things, in your summers, go work at a vet clinic that's going to expose you to spays and neuters and placing catheters and making bandages and splints and some of those things that, you know, you might not feel like you get enough of your senior year.
I don't think you get enough of it at all unless you've really had good veterinary experience outside of vet school, right?
Yeah.
There's very few that get to get on to like the emergency rotation where they're on call. There's very few that
get to do much because, let's face it, the universities, the traditional universities, have phenomenal, phenomenal support staff, right?
Yeah.
They do. That's why they're there. They're very good, and they're very good at teaching.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thank you.
Yeah.
For coming in. So if you are interested in Dr. Gassel, do you have any contact information?
Sure. The hospital number's 949-833-9020. Email is adamgassel@gmail.com. adamgassel@gmail.com. I think on Instagram I'm at agassel.
You are agassel.
Yeah.
Well, that was too easy. And also with this podcast, if we want to hear from everybody. So Dr. G at vetmedit.com. Send us your questions. I'm always going to have wonderful guests that have a lot of experience. And remember, we're all cheerleaders for this profession. We love this profession. We want this profession to succeed. And more importantly, we want these early career vets to enjoy what we did when we came out.
Yeah.
And there's no reason you can't. But you have to understand you have to be in the right situation. You have to have the right people behind you. You have to have a shoulder to hold on to, a shoulder to cry onto, and people willing to answer your questions. And I always tell new career vets that if you have people that make you feel bad because you're asking a question, you're probably not in the right place.
Yep.
So, but thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.